recording. I've had a real weird thing, actually.
Oh.
Incoming call from Adam Christian.
Now he calls after I press record.
Sorry. At least he showered this morning. You smelly git. It's the Mac Show, nearly, for Adam Christensen. He's here. The week in Macintosh, as discussed by a fantastic panel of me, Ewan Rankin. What a panel we have. Look at this. We got five. We would have had six, but Greeny's not back off the train yet. Starting us up, top left, it's the Swags.
Hello.
Mr. Daily News Show. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, it's going well. It's going really well.
It is.
Enjoying it.
You're doing a grand job, pal. We're getting rave reviews.
Thank you.
And you, thank you. Third most downloaded episode in the UK iTunes store this week.
Well, I've seen that. Another one that I came across too is that I guess we got number six or something too. So I'm really happy. That's quite cool.
Yeah,
I'm flattered actually.
Daily dose of news. It's well that man. This way.
Cheers.
Our man in the Philippines and our other man in the Philippines. We have two agents out there.
Yeah, TJ, but only one has an iPhone.
Yeah, come on, though. TJ, show us. Here we go. Yeah, now, this is release day, so this is like unboxing day for you guys.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah. So official release day.
What do you think so far then, TJ?
It's unboxing day for TJ.
It's massive. I'm trying to get used to it. It's big.
Did you get the 6 Plus?
I was already able to get a case 2 weeks ago, so I didn't have the bar of soap experience that you did.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's slippery as hell. Did you get the 6 or the 6 Plus?
6 Plus.
Oh, okay. Did I talk you into that?
You were one of them.
Yeah.
You were one of them. You were a few other people. I was content with the 6, and when I started hearing friends of mine who said the 6 Plus battery would last them a day, and compared to my experience with the 5S, I have to recharge 2-3 times in a day. I was like, boy, I can't wait for that. So I when I finally got my hands on one, I saw one, I touched one, and the most important thing was the pocket test, that it fit in my front pocket of my jeans.
Will it bend?
It did, yeah, it does.
Now, I set mine to charge before I go to bed, and I put an alarm on for the morning, and I don't charge it by my bedside and get up, and it lasts me the whole of the next day. So you're going to get there. I mean, you're saying if you're charging it a 5 three times a day, you're probably going to get about a day out of it, maybe then. So, because you sound a lot heavier than me.
That'll be heaven for me.
That'd be perfect. Good on you. Next to him, Andy Anacco.
Hi, Lynn.
Our lead singer. How you been, buddy?
It's a team effort. You know, I mean, no one member of the team is more important than any of the others. Yes. I do have a separate agent, and I do have separate management, and I am working on a solo, but that doesn't mean that I will not retain the band as my backup group when I, kick this booster rocket off and go into a higher orbit.
So we're the E Street Band, is that what you're saying?
And, you know, what backup band is more famous than the E Street Band? You know, too Clarence right. Clemons, how many saxophone players do we really know? You could be that Clarence Clemons. You could be that guy that, for 4 minutes off of a three-hour show, I'll just, like, back away and let you do the solo and let people applaud you.
I can get a note out of a sax, so I'll take that. That'll do.
Excellent.
Quite that far. Next to him, I can't believe. I said to Paul Wheatley when he said, we need to get Mike Rose on. I'm like, we must have had Mike on before. Nope, never had Mike. Never. How the hell have we done this? We've never had Mike Rose on before.
It's a shame and a tragedy, but you know what? We all live and learn, and I'm glad to be here today.
I'm directly
below Andy, which is, you know, a place I've always yearned to be.
It's like we've been sitting in the corner of the pub drinking away for 4 years, and you've been sat there looking in your beer, and no one's noticed. I'm so sorry, pal.
I've gone through so many bowls of peanuts, I can't even tell you. Thrilled to be here. I apologize for the lack of fine decor, but I do have a 6 Plus, so I feel like I'm virtually in the Philippines just because I
have a 6 Plus. Ergo, you've eaten so much urine.
Would you guys just stop rubbing it in?
Oh, yeah.
Please.
Swags didn't get delivered.
So sorry.
So TJ's got his. Kyle, yours should have been delivered today.
It should have been delivered today, yes. Well, I'll say the name, Globe. You're on my list. You know what list that is right now.
Well, I think we'll have quite a few listeners in the Philippines this week because of you and TJ being on and Andy and Atco. So that message may get back to them. So you might be cut off come Monday.
Good. I hope it's here tomorrow.
I've gone to him last because I need him to wake up first. How you doing, Adam? Lazy boy Christensen.
I had to make sure that Mike had the proper experience.
Oh, first time. Jolly good, jolly good.
Couldn't well enough start on time, could we?
No, that would be horrific. Don't do that, God's sake. What's happened to us in the week? Well, we've had a review, and we've only had one review, and it's a video review. It's a review of the video show, if you like. And it's the first one we've ever had from the United Arab Emirates. Hallelujah. Fantastic. I'm over the moon. It's from UAE iTunes. And she's put, my English is not great, but this is not the show to help improve it. Spot on. But if you're an Apple fan, you must have The Mac Show. You will see the cool apps, new stuff, and cool rumors. Spend some time to know the awesome group, and let's say we all agree to Will Green with a smiley. This show makes me laugh hard, and I have a teary eye while driving. Have fun, guys. Dude, don't watch the video show while you're driving.
So essentially she's comparing us to like airborne pollen and dust.
It could be. I mean, it's just
a very sweet compliment. It's just that if you're insecure, you always find that little thin wedge you can stick in there to turn it to sort of a dig.
I don't want to resort to stereotypes, but everyone goes on about crazy Arab drivers. But if they're listening to us... No,
racist people do that, but go ahead.
No. Thank you very much, UAE iTunes, for a review.
My role here today is just to poke holes in your boat whenever possible.
You are a first, sir, madam. You are the first United Arab Emirates review. So congratulations. Round of applause. We like winners here. Well done.
Don't forget to send the oil, please. Thank you.
Don't crash the car. We need all the viewers we can get. Thank you very much.
Does that mean that she's designated the official UAE ambassador to the show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good point. BTN ambassador to the UAE.
She now has consular, her house or apartment now has consulate status. So anytime you want to take anything in or out of the country, diplomatic pouch, they can't even touch it.
The BTN diplomatic pouch.
Fluids above 2 ounces, laugh at it.
Diplomatic plates, well spotted.
Park wherever the hell you want.
Say the British Tech Mac Show. I'm sure that all the traffic cops in United Arab Emirates already know that she gets special permissions.
You know, you used to get like plates made up for cars and stuff for like promotional events and that kind of stuff. Well, they've locked making car plates down to an absolute. You have to have the owner registration document. And I went in to get like a promotional plate made up a few years ago, and the guy said no. It clearly can't be used as a number plate because it's got words on it. There's no numbers. No. You don't make promotional plates anymore. We're not allowed to. Wow. Why? UK legislation, we can't make promotional plates. Why'd you make the one that says number plates made here that's on number plates then? Lying it. But I never got one. They wouldn't give me one. large screened iPhone 6 and 6 Plus is less popular with the Android switchers than predicted. The large-screened iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus may have been less popular with Android switchers than analysts initially predicted. Discuss why on earth are there big people in Android who were saying that, give us a bigger phone, are now displeased, it would seem.
Because it was $100 more.
Is that the price?
All along when they were saying Android, you just said, we would absolutely switch to the iPhone if only there was a large-screen one. Psych! Complete troll.
Okay, I'll go with that. It sounds better.
It runs iOS. It's not Android. Isn't it as simple as that?
Yeah.
Okay, so you reckon that's the only reason, though?
Well, I mean, they're... People who don't want to buy something will find any excuse not to buy it, whether it's Ben Gates or iOS 8.01. But I don't personally think there was a huge pent-up switcher demand of people who were currently running Android on large phones who said, if I would switch to iOS if only they had a large phone. I think there were quite a few iPhone 4 owners and 4S owners who said, I'm not going to buy the 5. I'm going to jump to the 6 or 6 Plus because my eyes are getting bad. I need a bigger phone. but I don't know. I'm not sure who was anticipating that large bolus of switchers coming because they were waiting on the 6 and 6 Plus.
Are we just talking about this, Ewan, that they're switching, they're not going to the 6 Plus, or they're more going towards the 6, or they're just not switching?
The story says a survey revealed that fewer iPhone numbers came from the Google Android platform in 2014 compared with the number of buyers who switched from Android to iPhone in 2013. So what they're saying is that you know, if Apple have kind of, well, first question, why did Apple go from a smaller screen to a larger phone? Was it consumer pressure / market pressure? And if it was market pressure, these figures don't say that's market pressure. Because unless the Android users are just suddenly happy with the Android phones that they've got.
I don't know. Well, also, that's the entire year, too. I mean, how much of that is actually down to since the 6 introduction?
Well, this is September 2014 compared to September 2013.
Okay. Well, there may be also market pressure from their own market already. At least keeping their iPhone-happy users staying on iPhone. I mean, I know people who've switched. They've left iPhone for Android just for the bigger screens.
Ewan did that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I went to a screen because I was sick and tired of the iPhone 4S size screen. And when the 5 came out with, a Wii extension on it, but nothing anywhere near what I wanted, I stayed back.
I think the failure point here is, though, how do you predict how many people are going to switch from Android to iPhone and what phone they're going to get? I think that this is a comment on, well, here's what we pulled out of our butt. And then when we saw what realized that what we pulled out of our butt was not quite accurate. It's like, say, I can predict how many aliens are going to land next year, get one really good column out of that, it'll get a lot of clicks. And then by February, when no aliens have landed, my prediction has failed, I can write another column about, now, why are so few aliens landing on Earth this year? It must be a failure on Earth to attract and hold these kind of customers. So I'm sure there are going to be some people who are going to be talking about how here's why the iPhone is just not appealing to Android users, because we took a guess that was not correct enough. And rather than say we just simply took a guess, we're going to say that there's something Apple did wrong with the iPhone 6 Plus.
No, if you go back to sales figures for 2013, there was a lot more people switched from Android to iOS
to iPhone
in 2013 than switched in 2014. So what I'm saying is the big screen has not been the attractor, because the number of people who are swapping from Android has gone down.
I think it's kind of disingenuous for anybody to claim that the thing that was keeping people from switching to the iPhone was the lack of a larger screen. That certainly could have been a factor, but I think it just means that people are more attracted to operating systems and software and compatibility with their own work environments. I think.
What about the watch issue? Actually, sorry, Kyle.
Oh no, I was just going to say, I think Andy actually touched on something there. I think if you want to be frank about it, I'm going to be all serious about it and stuff. The iOS, the OS, you would say, it hasn't really changed. And that's something that maybe is a bit disappointing. I'm a little bit disappointed with that. Yeah, okay. And that may be it still looks the same, so I'll just stay on Android. So, yeah, it's got a bigger screen, but whoop-de-doo. So that may be one of the major factors there, because it does pretty much look the same.
I prefer the Windows OS completely. I also think that
a larger iPhone is something that I think when people were talking about larger iPhones, they were talking about the iPhone 6. They weren't necessarily talking about something as big as the 6 Plus. And even the people who were really, really eager, who said, oh, this is even better, even bigger, this is great, this is exactly what we want. As soon as you hold one in your hand, you realize that here is the commitment that you're making to carrying this for the next 2 years. Mm. And especially when you get a chance to hold the iPhone 6 in your hand at the store at the same time, you realize that, the iPhone 6 Plus is a very special sort of beast, and I really shouldn't get this unless I can come up with really great reasons why I want a screen that's this big.
And there's the bar of soap factor, as you mentioned. I mean, until you get a case on the 6 Plus, it is a thrown phone waiting to happen.
I really wish that Apple would rethink this, because I'm reviewing the iPad Air 2, and it's the same problem it had earlier, where I have plastic devices, plastic stuff like the Kindle HDX, which doesn't necessarily feel any less not, it doesn't feel, I can't say that it doesn't feel as good in the hand as the iPad Air. But the thing is, I can like put it on my sofa and go out and get a drink and it will not be on the floor when I come back. I really think that if you're looking at the big advantages of Apple making phones so slim, I think the real advantage is that now you can put a case on it and that case is sort of free, as opposed to in terms of like how much bulk it's going to add. I think that Apple takes away bulk from the phone, which you then decide to add on your own by adding a case to it, which is starting to look more and more necessary as Apple makes these things rounder and smoother and slimmer.
Andy,
put the silicone case on it, and boy, not only is it very, very pretty, but it also gives you that grippiness you really want.
Yeah, has anyone else got any audio problems there?
Have I got
I don't think so.
Like, inbound?
Like how?
Oh, it's all right, it's me. It's obviously me battery packs going on the side of this. Sorry about that. US government has warned the iOS users about the mask attack vulnerability. And then there's another story that updates that at the moment, saying that they're not aware of any customers who are affected by this. What was mask attack all about?
It was this silly, I think there are two that were talked about that were kind of old news sort of stuff. And another one of those quote vulnerabilities unquote, where if a really bizarre set of circumstances were to happen, basically if you are an enterprise user and you have a certificate on your phone that says that it's okay for this authority to place stuff on your phone outside of the normal iTunes store chain of command, then under another set of circumstances it would be possible for a malicious operator to put an app on your phone that takes the guise of a different app. And the demonstration that they created was a hacked version of Gmail that takes the place of the victim's legitimate version of the Google Mail app, but of course is sending all information back to a third party. But just like pretty much every other hack that has surfaced over the past 3, 4, 5 years, it's not the sort of thing that people are usually worried about. People are worried about, I visit a website and click a button and suddenly there's a keylogger on my phone and I don't know about it. This is the sort of thing where it would be such a remarkable chain of events to make this happen that it's more of a proof of concept than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, the attack last week was one of those things. You know, there was an awful lot of user intervention
I didn't even mention that it's not it, even if all this, even if you do have this certificate set up, and even if you do, you are targeted with an app you already have there, you also have to blow through a bunch of dialogues that says, yes, let this happen, yes, let this happen, yes, let this happen, because the iOS is specifically and explicitly saying, is it okay for me to let this app do this to your phone? So it just doesn't seem likely.
Yeah, no. Has anyone heard any of this comments or rumors since? But I mean, that seems to be the de facto statement.
That's pretty much it. I mean, I think this also goes down to the fact too of people out there that are also wanting to get stuff free. They don't want to go to the app store and they don't want to get it legitimately, so they'll try to, you know, and we've seen this before in jailbreak terms. So as long as you keep everything in the Apple garden, you should be fine.
Yeah, there's a comment here that Winrod has posted in the chat room that's just from a spokesman talking to iMore. We designed OS 10 and iOS with built-in security safeguards to help protect customers and warn them before installing potentially malicious software. We're not aware of any customers that have actually been affected by this attack, and we encourage customers to only download from trusted sources like the App Store and to pay attention to warnings as they download apps. The only thing I will say is that, I mean, I've got quite a lot of software on here that I can't do without. And when I, you know, you go to security settings and it says run anyway, that happens a lot more than I would like it to. I would like more developers to be trusted by Apple that are clearly doing software which can be trusted. But what's the fee for that? That's the only question.
Well, I mean, is that the Mac side or the iOS side?
Mac side. Okay.
Is this most of the mask attack is iOS side? So
yeah.
Very, very few users outside enterprise context are those who have Test Flight or Hockey installed to beta test apps. Very, very few of them would have ever seen this dialogue before. So the average user, when they're said, do you want to trust this developer, is going to go, what the heck is this? I've never seen this before.
Right, yeah.
Obviously, on the Mac side, with Gatekeeper on, that's going to be less of a, there's going to be less of a barrier to accepting that. But, since Mask Attack is iOS only, and WireLurker is this sort of weird hybrid Mac and iOS piece of malware. It's two different potential risk surfaces. With WireLurker, it's a much weirder, actually, set of circumstances, but one that does actually appear to be effective in the wild, as opposed to Mask Attack, which is a proof of concept that nobody has really seen. No one has really been directly affected by it.
Yeah, my comment was really more to say that there's a lot of applications that I've put on the computer of late that seem to have just install it anyway because it's not from a trusted developer. And I think that's disappointing for developers that they're not trusted by Apple. But I don't know what the commercial barrier to being accepted by Apple as a trusted developer is.
It may just be a technical barrier. I mean, they may be trying to do stuff that doesn't play well in sandboxing. They may not have gotten around to it yet, to getting it signed. In some cases, it's older apps that are no longer in active development and have never been signed. But I agree with you. It's a pain in the neck on the Mac, and it is the UAT fatigue. I think was what it was called on the Windows side, not UAT, but the other. Whenever you were getting the constant security warnings on Windows 7, you know, allow, and people just became inured to it. And there is a risk of that happening on the Mac if more, as you say, more and more applications are not signed, because people are not gonna think of them as anything potentially hazardous.
Yeah, I mean, there's several reasons not to sign your app, and I think Mike kind of hit on all of them there. And one of them is just, I don't want to pay the $100 a year to be in the developer program. And, I spend very little time on, there's a lot of apps out there that, were developed and maybe they don't spend a ton of time on. They just don't want to be bothered with it. And hey, it'll still work. People can figure out how to install it. But, I'm not going to bother to sign it. And it can be technically tricky too for some folks to figure out even the whole signing process.
Yeah.
Although Apple tries to make that, as simple as possible with Xcode and stuff like that.
I think the only thing is the sad side of the shareware market is freemium freeware market, the genuine freeware market, is kind of, because it's a lot of that stuff now doesn't come up as being signed. So therefore it's sad that you think, well, that's going to reduce the amount of times that it's installed because people like my mother is going to click on it and actually she might get a lot of benefit from it and it might be a perfectly safe piece of software, but because it's got the security flag come up now, she's going, oh, no, I won't touch that. So.
Well,
which is a good thing.
The other thing is, just because it's signed doesn't necessarily mean it's safe either.
No.
It's safer, but, stuff can still get through review processes and things like that. The main thing is that if there is something malicious in there, it can potentially, I guess, be tracked back to its source, right?
I'm actually more worried about authorized apps that are doing exactly that are not doing anything sneaky in terms of getting around the app's approval process, but are just doing things and taking permissions that they don't need to do things that you're not really aware of. That's the my biggest worry about the Current C app getting so much attention. The payment app that's getting so much attention over the past few weeks isn't so much that it's not as easy to use as Apple Pay, but the fact that so I'm going to load an app on my phone that now Walmart has access to, and maybe at first it won't ask for permission to access my contacts, my photos, my location, but there's going to be an update maybe 3, 4, 5 months in which suddenly it is tracking my location wherever I go, and suddenly it is mining my contacts for marketing information and all because I, quote, gave it permission, unquote, to access all that sort of stuff. I mean, people worry about all these really almost impossible hacks because they're publicized by a lot of different tech sites, but they're really under a lot more threat by just hyper marketers who put permissions into their apps that a simple tic-tac-toe game does not need. I mean, why does my tic-tac-toe game need to know my location at all times?
Right. Well, that may have something to do with Andy because say you're Walmart and I think we're all kind of becoming this. I mean, Facebook is doing it. It's becoming the norm now, which is a little unsettling at the same time. But if you want to look at funny terms about, Walmart, yes, they've gained access to this app. So what's the beneficial for me? Oh, well, I found out that underwear is on sale on Friday or something. So it's these kind of things. It's a give and take.
You would almost be okay with it if you were certain that that's the only thing they were doing with that information. Just like it's okay for the Starbucks app to say, it's okay for iOS to work with the Starbucks app to say, oh, you're in a Starbucks. I'm going to put the icon for your payment app right where you want it to be so that you can access it. What I'm worried about is that there's some sort of 80-page PowerPoint, and it would not be a keynote presentation. It would be a PowerPoint inside Walmart Corporate that simply says, and we can get so much information about when are they in leisure time mode, and when are they inside their cars, and when are they exercising, yeah. When are they inside their office. All that helps us to build a profile and target these people with offers and ads and make our brand even that more powerful. It's like as long as people are completely upfront about what I often say that I feel as though the deal that you make with Google is a transaction, because they are taking personal information from you, but they're enabling a lot of really handy features that you would approve of that are leveraged a lot better if they know where you are and what your habits are. That's okay if you're making a transaction like that. What I worry about are apps like this that I fear are just there to say, yes, I'm telling you that this app is to do convenient electronic payments. What you don't know is that this really is a marketing app that's designed to get as much marketing data from you as possible, so like we can sell that information on later on.
Yeah, no, I don't know when it's going to happen, but one of these days we're going to have to be able to where we can somehow, some way control that, because right now I hate being told, well, if it's free, then free is what you get. This is what you get. And it should be something else should come along to help that, or help the consumer on that end, I think. Sure. Because a lot of people don't even know. They don't even know.
Oh, that's been the same for a long time.
Isn't that what messaging apps do as well?
It is.
I don't know, Kyle, if you may have observed, Kyle, like in the last, I don't know, the last 2 years here in the Philippines, they have been really strangely aggressive. Viber, KakaoTalk, WhatsApp,
yep,
have been spending,
yep,
millions of pesos, $100,000 in advertising. And you're like, it's a free app. What do they get out of it? Just the ads that pop up on the screen. It makes you wonder if it's worth it for them. But at the end of the day, you worry if they're selling your information. You know, all they need is a name, a phone number, and an email address, and they're going to make money off of you. And we don't know.
And part of me wonders that, TJ. I mean, staying on that sort of subject, I mean, look at the telcos here that I don't know about you, but I get so much spam text every single day, and it makes you wonder if they're selling it back to them.
It could be. I mean, if you look at the time frame that when these messaging apps really picked up as well, they kind of coincide when at least for me, the amount of time that time when I started to receive so much more spam. It's insane.
I think to it's interesting to hear you guys talk about that from the perspective of the Philippines, where there is this great market, or great or potentially horrible marketing push on messaging apps, when domestically in the U.S. there was such a complete rabid overreaction to Facebook splitting up Messenger and splitting the Messenger app off of Facebook. You know, to Andy's point about people getting exercised about the wrong thing, the Messenger app had one flag that said, you know, can listen to audio when the app is closed, and everyone's like, it's spying on me, this is the end of the world, Obama has ruined everything. Anyway, and in fact it was not something that was new in Messenger. It was a feature that had been in the primary Facebook app for, you know, a couple of months, and they had a blog post. They said, we're listening to hear the songs that are nearby, and you can turn it off and on. It's up to you. And people got so exercised because there was that transition point between this is one thing that I think I understand to two things where there's something new, where there's novelty. And Facebook basically stepped in it in terms of communicating about that to users, why it was important to have a separate app, in the same way that Foursquare really stepped in it by splitting the check-in functionality out to Swarm, by not, again, communicating to users what this means. This is a more stable app. You're going to be able to check in quicker. You don't have to deal with all the other stuff around that experience if you're just chatting or you're just checking in. There are good reasons to do it, but very, very few of them were communicated to users. And you guys are sort of on the opposite side, where the app is just sort of silently going along and maybe adding more intelligence, adding more marketing savvy, adding more data collection, but because it's still perceived as the same app and you've made the same, you're not making any new choices about using it. You made those choices long ago. Everybody's just sort of, well, okay, you know, it's just WhatsApp, it's just Viber, it's the same app I've always used. There's no reason to worry about it. And I think that's what's frustrating.
Go ahead. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. It's just Skynet. Don't worry about it. We're all dead. Don't worry about it.
Well, you know, you say that jokingly, and Mike, I kind of understand what you're saying with, you know, people people overreacting to things, but more and more too, you have to start to consider the source and sort of what Andy's alluding to, right, is what is the intent of the person, potential intent of the people developing this technology and giving it to us for free or at a low cost. And, you know, I think about this week, you know, the Amazon threw out their Echo thing, right, which is the same kind of thing. It's going to be in your house listening all the time, you know, tied to your Amazon account. Right? It's like, well, why does Amazon want to develop these things? What is their potential? You know, I doubt, like you said, there's a slide presentation about, hey, there's going to be all this great information that we can pick up. And, you know, how deep are they going to go into your lives? You want to assume, okay, well, they're only going to use it for the purposes they say. But there's the potential to do a lot more. And I think it's right for people to kind of question that and go, you know, this doesn't sound like, you know, it sounds like great Star Trek technology and the stuff I've always wanted, but hold up a minute, you know, what are the potential, you know, Skynet style things that could come about because of this? I think it's
I can completely see a situation where Andy gets an Echo and then 2 weeks later a Amazon Prime tic-tac-toe playing chicken shows up delivered by drone on his stoop because they've been listening to him talk about this in his house for a while. But yeah, you're exactly right. There's a big data story that's not being necessarily told or well understood, and the reason it's not being well understood is because big marketers don't want it to be well understood. It's these interesting sort of breakout stories in odd directions that make people think, well, what are they doing with my information? That in many cases don't have much to do with the underlying challenges, the things like, you know, Amazon's awareness of purchasing or Google's awareness of, you know, what's going on in your email.
I think the thing that I don't mind the passive element of it. And I think the thing that bothers me is when there's an aggressive element to it. So, you know, if I see an advert on my Facebook page for some trainers, and I click on the trainers, and the trainers that they've shown up are some serious running trainers, the algorithm has got to be intelligent enough to go, right, Ewan went and looked at these trainers. I don't know whether he bought them or not, but the guesses are around this time he bought some trainers. So for the next couple of days, they should be giving me alternate trainer adverts. Their algorithm should be able to work that out. And then after 2 weeks, it should work out that I've probably bought some trainers, and it shouldn't show me those again until the average lifespan of a trainer dissipates. 18 months, 12 months, whatever it is.
The thing that I always complain about, you know, with Google ads, it's like, great, you know, I've agreed that I know you're going to kind of take this information and watch these things, but gosh darn it, be a lot smarter about how you're using it. If you're going to have the data,
exactly,
I'm going to let you have the data, don't use it in really stupid ways. You know, my classic example is every month I go pay, you know, my insurance bill online with a certain insurance company. And for the next few weeks after doing that, I get adverts for that insurance company. But if they watch my traffic, you know, and by watch, I say this could be an algorithm. This doesn't have to be a human. They would see, oh, at the beginning of the month, Adam always goes to this website. And that's the only time he goes to this website. And it's every month. And, you know, it's like, it's pretty easy to deduce what I'm doing. And that's both scary, but also powerful if they use it in the right way. And it's like, well, let's not give him ads for that insurance company. How about some alternative one?
Internet data collection is like, you just imagine that there's this big fat security guard reading a tabloid newspaper and drinking a coffee with a gun. And it's like there's a door to his right. And someone turns up with this huge box saying, I got some more internet data. And he goes, go ahead. And they just tip it, you know, down like a chute or something. And it's,
But I think that's one of the reasons. There's the technology, there's the implementation, but then there's also the social interface that all these companies really need to perfect. I think Google used to have there's a reason why I trust Google, I don't trust Facebook. One of them is that I think that Google has really learned that lesson. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that if you go to your Google profile page, you know, you're logged in, this is the stuff you can only see, you can actually, in very, very clear, plain English, there's a nice web app Google will show you, here's all the information we're collecting about you. You can see day for day, week for week. Like, if you've enabled, I use Google now, so I've enabled my Google to track my location because it does things that I enjoy it doing. But it's not collecting this information in secret. You can then just literally replay back. Here's everything we collected about where your location was over the past few days, few weeks, few months. If you don't like them having that information, you then have the ability to either download it so you can use it yourself, or delete it, or turn off tracking. And that's pretty much true of almost everything that they seem to track about you. And so just the simple fact that they are willing to say, this is your data too, here it is, make whatever use of it you want to, or tell us to knock it off if this is creeping you out. I mean, I have to say that I try to periodically check in on that sort of stuff. Sometimes I'll let a month or two go by. And it was a time when I'm looking at this map data, and it was only when I looked at this in aggregate over like a month and a half, 2 months, I realized that, okay, Andy, you left the house on Sunday. You didn't leave the house on Monday. You left the house briefly Tuesday morning, and then we're in the house until Thursday night. And then you left the house on Friday. Yeah, let's start leaving the house every single day rather than before we enter the Kleenex boxes on the feet and mason jars full of human urine stage of this self-employment phase.
Well, hello, Howard Hughes.
can I jump in here? I got some breaking news from the Philippines right now.
Okay, go on.
Breaking news. This would be TJ's corner.
Your phone is out for delivery.
Kinda. This goes out. I just got a text message. This is what it says. Globe iPhone update. We deeply apologize for not being able to deliver your iPhone 6 Plus today, as promised. And this is due to unprecedented demand for the handset. Rest assured, we've secured a unit for you, and we should deliver it over the weekend if your delivery address is residential. If it's an office address, we should deliver it on Monday. To make up for this is actually the good part, to make up for this inconvenience, we will waiver your monthly service fee for 1 month, and this will reflect on your December-January bill.
Cha-ching!
Hey, the power of BTN. Just like that.
Really?
You're going to be making phone calls like a mofo all month long. just stick it to them.
Data for everybody. On the tether? Come on.
Hello, Amazon. I'd like to place an order over the phone. I'm searching for a pair of shoes. Could you read over to me all the shoes that you have?
Trainers.
No, enough time. I'm sticking it to my phone service
shoes
provider.
Shoes in the Philippines are bad karma, mate. Don't do that.
No, I think this is very generic because it doesn't say my name or anything to it. I think this is for other people that didn't get a phone today, so they're sending this out, and this good on them. Way to go, Globe.
What you saying?
Just don't keep spamming me, please, with all the text messages.
So what you're saying is they've shafted thousands today.
Oh, hundreds of thousands, maybe tens of thousands. I wouldn't say hundreds of thousands, but definitely tens of thousands.
So effectively, if you're in Manila and you're not TJ Manitok or any of the suburban areas around there, you didn't get an iPhone today because everyone was delivering it to TJ.
Hey, I drove an hour to get mine. It was not delivered.
Oh, that's commitment.
Yeah, he had to go and get his. Yeah, in Manila traffic. So he says an hour. He's actually meaning 4 hours.
So go on, hold it up, TJ. Just rub it in a little bit. There we go, Carl. Here we go. Here it is. That's what an iPhone 6 Plus
tomorrow
looks like.
Yeah. Tomorrow. Be here tomorrow. I got faith now.
He's got the
time.
Right? So they.
It could be Sunday. That's true. Yeah.
Did they say which weekend?
No, good point. They didn't say which weekend.
There was no
you guys
day.
Suck. You know that? I was all on cloud nine. You guys suck.
pleasure to be of
free
service.
Monthly service fee, so you don't pay for your
bill. Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, that's the good part right there. They made up for it. That's good. Good on you, Globe. Good
FTC.
On you. I'm not as pissed off.
FTC have met with Apple over concerns over data privacy. We should have done this while we were doing the data privacy thing. Over the health information gathered by the Apple Watch. I suppose they're right to do due diligence on this, I guess, and make sure that Apple have got security mechanisms in place. It does say that there's no suggestion that Apple are going to be subject to a formal inquiry into how they're going to do it. But I know Pebble 2 has now got an update, hasn't it, to do health information as well as. You've got the Microsoft Band coming out, which will gather information from that as well. Although it's iOS that's gathering that information, and they're talking about doing this with the watch, but there's other devices now that are going to gather that. Are they going through the same due diligence, or would you believe, or is Apple being singled out a bit here?
It's pretty complicated because there are actually regulations as to how you can manage health information. I don't think it really affects fitness trackers, but it's given that almost Google and Apple, if they don't want to just simply be tracking your steps and your heart rate, they also want to be your point of contact through your doctor, where when you have regular visits to your doctor, your phone should be able to contact a web app on your provider's page. And so your phone can keep be a data store to, like, if you're diabetic, here's what your blood sugar level was every single day. If you've got other conditions, here's what your mobility has been like. Here's what your blood oxygen saturation has been like. And if you're going to have to control and take and track and secure information like that, you may as well make it part of a whole overall policy of health control information. So I do think that Apple is maybe being singled out because they're probably the most prolific actor inside the health app phase right now. But it's obviously, as every single device that you're using, I mean, I've got this Moto 360, and it too has made updates to its health tracking apps. We're definitely going to need a set of policies that everybody can expect to see when they start to enable these features.
Yeah, no, I think, the health information in the wrong hands is clearly a very bad thing. If the insurance company's near anything that you've got from your phone, or whether you could suggest that your phone would then become a piece of evidence, maybe in a criminal case or civil case.
There's a lot of intermediate steps between here and there. We're already at a place where things like social media updates on, you know, Foursquare is a good example. Every week I check in, say I'm playing tennis. Well, you know, if my insurance company sees, well, you skipped 6 weeks of playing tennis and then, you know, we tested you and you were pre-diabetic, or you played tennis 3 times in 1 week and then you were admitted with, you know, heart palpitations or angina. So, you know, we're already in the sense of potentially providing actionable or sensitive information, we're already kind of oversharing. But I agree with Andy that when you get down to what's your blood sugar, what's your pulse rate, what's your temperature, what's your BMI, you know, all the sort of more intimate things than simply what steps did I take and where was I, there does need to be some regulatory framework. I think Google's already been burned to a certain degree on this with Google Health. I think, you know, and I do have a Pebble, and I have noticed when it started saying, "Hey, now I'm tracking this health information," but some sort of dashboard, actually similar to the Google takeout and the data liberation front framework that they have, again, because they've been sort of burned on data portability and privacy awareness before, that it needs to sort of be the health liberation front. How can I make sure that I know exactly who has access to my very intimate personal information about how my body is performing, as opposed to things like where I was, what I bought, and who I talked to?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I think just yesterday, the day before, the automakers basically formed a consortium to say, we are establishing a self-imposed set of data privacy policies on the data that our car computers collect about you. Given that these computers, of course, they got GPS, now they got maps. They're collecting information about service that it can use to communicate with its own service centers to help create a better service plans for your car. Now that a lot of these have built in like free 3G and 4G just to keep basic track of data flowing between the two, they've actually contacted, I forget what United States government regulatory agency to say, here is our policies that we are putting into place that basically says that we are not collecting it for any use other than to help the consumer. We are not going to make that available to marketers or to the government. We're going to be destroying data that we don't need as we collect it. This is just coming back to mind because I read it, bookmarked it for later study, but part of the article about this mentioned that there's some trick about how now that they have basically said, filed this with a government agency saying this is our plans, they're now more than obligated to actually do it. This isn't just PR, which I thought was a really good forward-looking sort of thing for them to do, to say, we don't feel as though we can we're making enough money off the cars that we don't need to figure out how we can make money selling marketing information about how people drive. We can actually even improve our customer satisfaction by saying, we have voluntarily decided to protect your information and get people to want to buy the upgrades for these new in-car computing and navigation.
Well, we've got the same problem with iPhone apps that you start up and then the data is sent back to your insurers and it shows how careful a driver you were, therefore your premium comes down, etc. And they're complete BS. They're just give us your details, A. B, use the application for a week and then we'll give you a quote saying it's heavily discounted when actually it isn't. I think the motor industry
marketing
is criminals.
Yeah. Marketing. Marketing.
Apparently the 12.9-inch iPad Pro is rumored for production in Q2 2015 with manufacturing issues akimbo at the minute. Kyle, you've got a man on the inside. Tell us more.
He's really on the inside because I can't find him.
Oh, right. Okay.
No, I'm dead serious. He has not said a thing to me since he has said about the unveiling or whatever it was. I get the feeling something isn't going right with the manufacturing process. That's what I think.
Well, that's what this says. So, yeah,
and I also get the feeling that some things are trumping it. I get the watch or resources are being spent otherwhere, or for the phone, who knows? I'm not really sure. I still think we might see it, but maybe they're going back to the drawing board. But I really have not heard a thing since the keynote.
As with all things Apple rumored, like you said, I'm sure there's been an Apple TV. They just never made it. Has there been a 12.9-inch iPad Pro? I'm sure there has been.
I'm sure there has.
A Benek kind of hack from an existing 13-inch MacBook Air or something like that. Is this actually going to make it as a commercial device to market? There's the question.
Yeah, I think it will.
It will.
Okay. I think it eventually will. No, I think it will. I think there's another part of me that says they're filling the market out right now because we all know that the tablets are a little bit down. I mean, okay, let's take a roll call here. Who has bought a tablet or who recently? Who bought the new iPad Air 2?
No, because I got the one and I'm happy with the one. So
I've got the Air 1.
Me too. Big.
I have the mini one.
Yeah, love the mini. No one bought an iPad. So are you
I think we're at the stage right now where we're content. It's kind of like what PCs kind of became for a while. It's like, I don't really need that much more power. I don't, that's fine. I watch YouTube videos. Yeah, the cats still look okay. They look fine. Yeah, it's still streaming HD. Yeah, that's okay. Oh, I check email. That's fine. I think we're at that stage right now with the tablet. Until we can do more with it, people are content with it. Maybe that's where Apple's going to start next with this Pro, that we can do more with it.
If this thing's going to make a hit, it's got to become like a mobile Wacom tablet in the fullest degree, and it's got to run full OS 10 apps
Not really. I mean, I'm just finishing up my Air 2 review this week. And I actually had to break a section off into its own column because just talking about what role a 9.7-inch tablet has today, it's right now, I mean, obviously it was a huge deal when it was first released because it was the only computer of its type and it really won all the accolades it deserved. But now it's in a spot where it's a $500 to $800 computer in a world in which if you don't want something that big, there are many exceptional mini tablets. One of them made by a couple of them made by Apple, many of them made by other people for even less money that will fit into a back pocket very nicely and will do most of what anybody would ever want a full-sized iPad to do. So strike number one. Strike number two, for $500 to $800, now we're definitely inside the realm of real like Windows 8 tablets, where if you want to have, if you're spending money to make this into a productivity thing and not just something to watch Netflix, obviously something that runs a real desktop operating system is going to be a lot less of a pain in the butt to deal with, especially because just the simple fact that it has a card slot and a USB port, that solves 90% of the problems I ever have when I try to use my iPad as a real field computer. And then thirdly, the iOS for all the strides it's made in iOS 7 and iOS 8 still absolutely sucks when it comes to multitasking. And here I'm not even talking about wanting to have multiple windows on the screen at the same time. I'm talking about what if I were able to hold down the command key and then hold down the tab key and switch between two apps when I've got it connected to a Bluetooth keyboard. It doesn't even help you out with that. So I think that it's ripe for revolution. So as is right now, the 9.7-inch iPad is kind of a hard sell unless you really, really are looking at the sort of content where you definitely want a larger screen, like you're reading comics or you're enough of a movie fan that you don't want to see something on a smaller screen. I think that I felt that it was kind of suspicious that Apple put this much extra power into the Air 2, double the amount of application RAM. I think this points to new features coming in the next major update to iOS 8, so that maybe we will be able to tile apps or at least have split screen apps. Maybe there will be more support for actually doing productivity stuff and making multiple apps work at the same time. And maybe that does point to a larger screen iPad coming out that has a lot more capability that really can answer the question, yes, but if I'm spending $600 on an iPad, why would I buy this instead of a Lenovo, really well-built Lenovo convertible tablet that costs maybe $50 to $100 more? I think Apple is preparing an answer to that question in 2015. There isn't one right now.
There's a question from iBookery in the chat room. He's saying, kind of asking the question, is the iPad Pro something as a response a little bit or a necessity to feel like they're competing with Surface Pro and maybe having something that would be up to running OS X?
No. Yeah. If Microsoft were selling anything as successfully as the iPad, boy, would they be happy. They're not. I don't think that Apple is necessarily intimidated by the Surface. I think that they are certainly looking 4 or 5 years ahead, and they realize that there's going to be a point at which the 9.7-inch iPad in its current form is not going to be very attractive to very many people. So I do think they're laying the groundwork to make the case that this is our cheapest laptop is $899. If you want a computer that's less expensive than that, we have a computer that we have built designed to be a really good $500 to $600 computer, and now it's our job to make it more attractive as someone's not necessarily their sole computer, but as the computer they can rely on full day without wishing that they had bought a MacBook Air instead.
Go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, I mean, Andy's kind of hitting the nail on the head, and I've been throwing this theory out, and people have been calling me crazy because, you know, a lot of companies years ago tried these sort of hybrid devices, right, merging a laptop and a desktop, and Microsoft has been experimenting with that, with the Pro since, you know, with the Surface, specifically the Surface Pro since the beginning, and now we're seeing with the Surface Pro ads them going after, you know, the MacBook Air. I think Apple's been thinking about this for even longer and trying to figure out, okay, when's the point where we sort of merge those two things, the ultralight portable laptop and the tablet. And I think, you know, the reason we're hearing 12-inch Retina MacBook Air rumors and now 12-inch iPad Pro rumors is I think there's very much a possibility that Apple's been playing around with a device that is a 12-inch form factor that is sort of bringing this stuff together. I think they're still trying to figure out, you know, what are all the features and things that need to be in there so that it can become that device that is that, you know, that thing that gives you more power, it's more desktop-like, but it still has that tablet experience and feel. But, and I think that's why we haven't seen them release it yet, but I think that's what's going on. I think there is something there. When we're going to get it, I don't know. Maybe 2015 is that year, but it's not going to just simply be, you know, I think people get crazy because I say, well, it's like a hybrid device, but it's not going to be like the hybrid devices we know of. It's going to be something very much different in terms of the how thought out the experience and the usability of it is.
I don't think, I mean, yeah. Andy said there about Apple being intimidated by Surface, and I don't think they are. I agree entirely. Do you think Apple's right. Not intimidated?
I'm sorry, I didn't say that they were intimidated. I said they were definitely not intimidated by Surface.
That's right, not intimidated. That's what I meant to say. Sorry. No, they're not being intimidated by Surface.
I think they're being smart and you know, cautious about it as well. You know, I haven't followed with the Surface Pro 3, but, you know, certainly something that I would imagine, especially in the business space where Apple's, you know, in the enterprise space where Apple's made a lot of traction with iPads, you know, that maybe some IT departments are looking at that sort of thing. And, you know, I think Apple's also thinking about, you know, when does this merger happen? I mean, Tim Cook said from the very beginning, tablets are going to replace, you know, PCs as the main device for a lot of people moving forward. And Apple wants to make sure that they stay at the top of that position, that they are that device that people are using in lieu of a quote-unquote traditional laptop or desktop.
I don't think that Apple are intimidated by Satya Nadella, but the one thing I would say is, has Nadella made enough of an impact in just a short few months of him being in CEO position that Apple would be looking at going, you know, let's not take our eye off the ball. This guy is clearly, you know, creating a new Microsoft, which is not the Microsoft of old, which has far more to offer as competition to us now.
Well, I mean, Microsoft, there was an interesting comment from Satya Nadella this week that Microsoft has three products that he cares about, which is Azure, Windows, and Office. And everything else is really secondary. I think it was on CNET that they picked this up, but those are the three pillars of that company. So if Surface is part of their strategy, it's to make a great Windows experience. If Outlook Online or Minecraft or Xbox are part of the strategy, it's to leverage the power of their services and to potentially extend the Windows quasi-monopoly further out. There's a world coming in which Windows is far less relevant, and I think Nadella is smart enough to see that the writing on that wall. So the fact that Office is now free on iOS and Android tablets, I don't think any one of us could have predicted that was going to happen 2 years ago. Deference, of course, to anyone who did actually predict that was going to happen. But the idea that Microsoft's going to give away free or freemium access to the crown jewel, which is Office, in order to engage those tablet users where they are. I think that's a very, very interesting change in strategy for a company that has made its bones for 30 years on selling software.
Yeah, no.
It seems to me they're moving back to understanding that that's their big thing, right? And that's the beauty of what he's doing, is he's putting the focus back on the software and services. And if anything, I think Apple and Microsoft are getting closer, and really Tim Cook should be sending gift baskets over there, because, you know, Office on the iPad, I think Apple's going to sell a lot more iPads because of Office. And, you know, now they're doing the unlimited data, which I'm excited about. I was not excited about, you know, their cloud product, but now they're giving me unlimited storage. With my Office subscription. You know, that's great. I'm not going to run out and buy a Surface tablet because I don't need to, and I love that. So I have a lot of good feelings about Microsoft right now, because they finally brought really powerful versions of Office to the iPad. They're doing great things with their cloud services. And we saw the tight integration of Bing into Siri, and that's been working great for me too. So, you know, I'm not a Bing user. I'm still a Google user in Safari, but I do a lot of searches through Siri as well. So that's a lot more traffic and stuff for Microsoft. So I think, you know, they're becoming that partner that Apple wanted in Google from the beginning, and it's interesting to see it happen.
Cool. Good discussion.
Guys, I got to go.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you, Andy, for coming. I do apologize. Yeah, thank you, guys.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, Nate. Thanks.
Bye, guys.
This podcast and a lot of the others are brought to you by the Network Union. They're brilliant. We had a fabulous day yesterday because there was a customer for them, five blokes on a bike, and we've lost more than that now. And who's gone? TJ's gone as well. Oh, bloody hell. Just as chickens. And
Dave, can I have Andy's line? Because his video looked awesome.
Glitchy as hell at this end. We had a customer that came from the Mac show, and TJ, the TNU didn't know about it. They'd done all the work for them, said thank you very much, paid the bill, off they go. And then they tweeted out yesterday, thanks to TNU for sorting this out, great to have heard of them through the Mac show. Huzzah! So Robert said, I didn't even know that they'd come from you. So if you're using TNU, for God's sake, tell them you got them through BTN. Because they've been advertising with us for months now, and we've been thinking, yeah, we've had a couple of people, but there's obviously a few more out there who haven't been saying anything. If you need anything that's, WAN, SIPs, MPLS, any of that kind of stuff, these are the guys to help you. If, you know, if you're small to medium enterprise, they can still set you up and help you, which is what they did with Five Guys on a Bike. So please, give them a contact. Tell them about yourself. Tell them what your business does. See if they can help you. If you're the decision maker in the business, it's a straight and obvious contact with them. If you're not, then please give us the name of the decision maker so that TNU can contact them. Get in touch with the network union, say you heard about it on BTN, and give them those details. And even if you can't do that, if you're just a consultant who's working there and you can only put the name of TNU forward but not give us any of the details of the company that you're working at, that's okay. Please just send a message to TNU that says, we've done this, I've passed the details on to this person. I'm sorry I can't give you any more details, but I promise I'm pushing you out there, which is what Lee Garrett's done on a fair old few places that he's been to. Please support them because they are supporting us quite nicely, and we do value their support of the network immensely. And we also value the support of UK2. You guys are buying shed loads of stuff from UK2, and they're well worth it. And there's a couple of tweets that I've retweeted this week about the tech support. Batwench, our old Batwench, who normally hives in the chat room, she's had a need to get in touch with tech support. 30 minutes later, fixed. It's all done and dusted. And we've had two or three of those this week. So brilliant. Thank you, UK2, for honouring your promise and looking after us. We'll hope we continue to look after you. Loads of offer codes, loads of money off, and also loads and loads of good, good service. Well, the cool thing should be quick and easy then today because there's only three of us.
TJ actually, just so you know, TJ sent me a DM and said he apologized. He also had to go too. I guess he's got an early day tomorrow.
That's
morning,
okay. No worries. Thank you for coming. Well, thank you for coming on.
You can put all the blame on me because I was 20 minutes late.
You're weak every late every sodding week, Christy. So I only moved the sodding show forwards for you.
Sorry. It's early here.
It's all right. Well, we'll let you get your
I was up late coding.
We'll let you get a breath. Now then, Kyle, what have you got for us as a cool thing?
Oh, I have a cool thing this week. I'm not even sure how much it is now because I actually got it when it was free, but it's called M-Pro, and it's a camera app. Unfortunately, this is on an iPhone 5 right now. It takes black and white pictures. Now, I love black and white photography. I just love the look of it, the nostalgic of it, and all these things. This app takes great black and white photos. You can really concentrate on the contrast. It's really great in low light. I just like it, and I've taken a lot of pictures of the cats, to be honest, but it works great. And when I got it, it was free. I think it's either 99 cents or $1.99. It might be $1.99. So it's called M-Pro. If you're looking to improve your black and white photography on the iPhone, check it out. It's really, really good.
Excellent, mate. Well done. Good job. I'll give that a go. Is it free, you say?
It was free when I got it, but I don't think it's free now because I was turned on by somebody at my office said, hey, have you tried this? It's free today. I went, no, and I tried it out. I think it's $1.99 though. I'll check. That's real quick. Right. We'll I'll let you know. I'll get back to you.
Okie doke. Adam, what have you got for us?
Okay, so I mentioned I was coding late last night. People who listen to the show probably know that I am a web developer and I work on web stuff. And a challenge often when you're developing now is you've got to be aware of mobile and mobile devices and things like that. But sort of testing and debugging on mobile can be tricky with Safari because one testing tool that's very, very helpful is the ability to go in and look at the source, you know, view the source code on a web page. And the only way to really do that, Apple, if you have developers tools installed, is you can attach a USB cable and you can use those and you can actually get in and get at the web inspector. Those people who are familiar with that on Safari on the desktop, you can get in there and do that. But if you just have your mobile device with you, and very often more and more these days, that's all I have on me, there wasn't really a way to do that until iOS 8 came out and extensions. So my pick is an app called ViewSource. It's 99 cents. And what it does is it enables one of the action extensions. So you can now go into your action extensions, turn on a view source extension, and then when you're on a web page in Safari, go into the sharing menu, And then tap view source, and now you can see the full HTML source. It's color-coded. You can actually get into the document object model, and there's a hierarchy view of that, so you can get in, drill into different elements on the page. It even has the ability to inject JavaScript, so you can write JavaScript on the fly and run that right inside the app. So if you want to do a little JavaScript testing, you can do things like there's a little info panel that'll show you the cookies that are being loaded on that page, so you can check that stuff out. So it's a really handy tool to have if you're a developer on your iOS device, and it's something we've needed for a long, long time. I'm hoping at some point Apple will actually bring their full web inspector to iOS, but until then, we have view source. So that's
excellent.
My pick.
Actually, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, 99 cents?
Yep. Yeah.
So you can get in there. That's,
and you can see,
that's sweet.
You can see what images are being loaded. I mean, it really, you know, the interface, you know, is minimalistic, but it gets the job done. You know, if you want to get in and look at your style sheets, if you want to look in at the JavaScript that's being loaded, you can get at all that stuff, and you can drill down and see it all. And again, what I really appreciate is that it's, you know, it's color-coded. And, you know, you can select items. So another great thing about this is if you have other tools, like I have tools for, you know, viewing source code and editing source code, you can copy and paste out of it too. So you can move it into another app and actually do stuff with it if you have something like, what am I trying to remember, the text tool that I use for HTML editing on iOS, but it's escaping me at the moment. But you can bring it into an app like that.
Hey, just a disclaimer on your behalf, Adam, you must be 17 years old to download this app.
That's, you know, that's Apple's browser thing, right? Anything that has a browser built into it, because the app itself, you'll never open. It's interesting because it functions as an extension. You can open the app and it has a built-in web browser so that you could browse to a page in the app and view the source. Mm-hmm. But you really don't need to do that with the extension. So, and because you could potentially go in the in-app browser and view, you know, that nasty porn.
All that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't imagine a 17-year-old doing that.
I think that's disgraceful. Yeah, it's a rundown porn.
Anything with the built-in web browser gets the 17-plus rating, unfortunately, on the App Store. I think it's kind of a stupid thing. But
actually, it looks pretty nice. 99 cents, you can't beat that.
Yep.
Not bad.
Very good.
Not bad at all. Oh, by the way, that Impro, $1.99.
Yeah, $1.49, and I've just bought it. And I've got to say, my pick of the week is Impro.
really?
No, I've just taken two pictures with it, and I didn't realize it's got the IR slider on the right-hand side. So
Yeah.
When you open it up, you've got black and white. You can control the exposure individually. It's frozen at the minute. You can control the exposure individually here next to it, but then you've got the IR frequencies there that you can block out or add in to make your to change your black and white image. It's absolutely superb. I've only taken two photos with it, and I think it's brilliant. My cool thing was going to be the Lindy USB sound card, but it doesn't work. Shit. That was what all the frigging around was at the start of the show.
Oh, so maybe you were just getting started.
Oh, dude, if you'd have been turned up on time, we would have been deep shit. So I haven't got one. although I did get sent a review unit for the Ollie. Have you seen the Ollie?
Mm-mm. I have it.
I have a review unit for the Ollie, and I'm playing with it at the moment, and I've got to say it is rather cool. It's well worth doing.
It's fun.
But watch this space.
That was my pick a couple shows back, I think.
Yeah.
The thing will go,
yep.
I don't know how it converts to
14 miles an hour.
14 miles an hour.
That's right. 20 kilometers.
Jeez.
Super. So I will do a full review for the reviews page soon. and I've got a Sphero to play with as well.
I'll tell you the one problem with it going that fast.
Go on. You can't control it.
You know, like, I think it uses Bluetooth for the communication.
Yeah, it loses it.
So you can't get it to go that far. That's the one disadvantage.
Yeah, no. It's I've had to play with the Ollie. I've got a Sphero to play with as well, which I'm planning on annoying the cat with later on.
well, hopefully it's not one of these things that gets stuck it gets stuck at 14 miles an hour, and then once you lose Bluetooth, once it's gone, it's gone.
No, it's actually pretty good. I find the controls quite hard to use. I think I don't disbelieve I can't master them, but they are quite tough.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky, especially if it gets disoriented because it spins and tumbles and stuff like that. It's super rugged.
Oh, yeah.
You take this thing off jumps and curbs and, you know.
Did you see what they did with
the heck out of it?
The Sphero.
I have the Sphero as well. Yeah, no, original Sphero.
The Sphero 2.
Because it's totally sealed.
Well, the Sphero 2, they threw it up in the air and someone shot it with a shotgun. And it landed. And there's just like a couple of pits in it. That's it. It didn't blow it to pieces or anything. It
I'll be
incredible. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Christensen?
You can find me over at maccast.com or just search for Maccast on iTunes. I also do the iOS show with Michael Johnston and Jeff Gamet. That's at theiosshow.com. And I'll throw a thing, you know, if we do the picks every week. If people want to see the iOS stuff that I buy and use and recommend and stuff like that, they should check out Appler at getappler.com. And you can see everything that I purchase, and I try and throw up items that I recommend and comment on things as well there. So it's like a place you can track all your apps, and you can see what your friends are buying and recommending and things like that. So they should check that out. That's at getappler.com.
Excellent. And where can we get you, Kyle?
You can get me 5 days a week on the BTN network and doing the news show, Monday through Friday. If you're living in the Philippines, you can hear my annoying voice on NBA Premium TV 7 days a week. And if that's not enough for you, Twitter at Kyle Swagger or KyleSwagger.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We've got big show this evening. We'll be back with the usual suspects discussing the week in the whole of technology. And, we'll see where we go from there, right? Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
Bye. Come on, iPhone 6 Plus. Come on.